the Enchanted Kingdom. And guess how they took him there? The Twinkie-mobile. Now that's descriptive language. When I see a symphony orchestra, 100 or so people playing some incredibly difficult piece of music in complete and perfect unison, as if they were a single organism, I remind myself that each one of them started the day in a different kitchen. 100 different musicians in 100 different kitchens scattered across the city. And sometimes I find myself wondering how many of them had eggs that morning and how many of them chose cereal. I try to guess whether the percentage of muffin eaters is greater among the strings or the brass section. I ponder whether or not the percussionists drink a lot of coffee, whereas perhaps the piccolo players lean more toward flavored teas. I don't know why these thoughts come to me, but they sure fill the time between scherzos. Catholic kids are stupid. They don't know how to handle a pedophile priest. Here's what you do. First of all, you don't get all scared and do whatever he tells you. Who wants to get sucked off by a 43-year-old clergyman with beard stubble? Not me. Instead, what you do is you kick him in the nuts. You kick him squarely in the nuts and you get the fuck out of there as fast as you can and you go tell somebody right away. You tell as many grown-up people as you can. One of them is bound to believe you. That's what you do. You don't wait 30 years. You kick the priest in the nuts and say, "Fuck you, Father, I don't do that shit. Try Jimmy Fogarty, I heard he blew the choir master." And you're out the door. And don't forget to take your rosary. On second thought, leave the rosary. A lot of good it did you in the first place. Three short stories. The Velvet Hat. She wore a velvet hat. She walked down the steps slowly, as if each one were a significant achievement. Her arm, bent severely at the elbow, pinned her purse closely to her side. The surface of the last few steps was cracked and uneven, and so she extended her tiny arm to grip the railing. At that moment, a man ran up and jammed an entire box of peppermints into her mouth. Not Martha Stewart. Vinny had just squeezed off three really vicious, warm, partially liquid farts, and was now trying with all his might to suck down from the back of his nose a huge gob of hardened snot that felt as big as a human embryo. Ignoring the dog shit encrusted under his fingernails from several weeks earlier, he reached deep into his throat, pulled loose some partially digested food, swallowed it again, and continued to make hamburger patties for the kids. Garnish. The man in the tweed hat stood by a tree, rolling a half-dried snot between his thumb and forefinger. Moments later, the snot now completely dry, he strolled casually past a sidewalk cafe and gently flicked it into a young lady's lemonade.
Why do you always
finish your sentences?
Yeah. It's something that's been bothering you for a long time? Yeah.
Well, it's a habit that started in grade school. When the teacher called on another kid, sometimes the kid would start to answer and then get stuck. So I would supply the rest of the answer.
And this habit has stayed with you
ever since that time.
But there must be something you can do about it?
The only thing I could do about it would be to find some person who might be willing to
finish your sentences?
Yeah. If I could just find someone to finish my sentences,
it would put a little balance in your life?
Right.
But why does it have to be someone else? Why couldn't it be
the same person? Why couldn't the same person whose sentences I finish
be the same person who finishes your sentences?
I don't know. Let's ask this man over here. What can I do for you fellows?
The American Retail Association reminds you that next Sunday is a Person I Know Day. It's a lot like Mother's Day or Father's Day, but instead of honoring your parents, you take the time to honor some other person you know. It can be anyone at all. Mailman, delivery boy, gas station attendant, drugstore clerk, even that interesting fellow who stands on the corner all day displaying his penis. Any person you know is eligible. In fact, every person you know is eligible. So why not honor them all? Go out today and buy gifts for all the people you know. It's the perfect way of showing your love and saying, "Hi, I'm sure glad I know you." And when you think about it, you'll probably be in store for some nice gifts yourself on a Person I Know Day. In fact, the more people you know, the more gifts you'll receive. So go for a long walk today and introduce yourself to every person you see. Just walk up and say, "Don't I know you? If not, I'd sure like to." Then give them your address and tell them to send you a gift. You'll make lots and lots of new friends. And you'll be helping the economy.
I've never seen anyone cleaning a church. I've seen many things, but never a cleaning crew working in a church, vacuuming, mopping, dusting the statues, and scrubbing the altar. You know why? I figured it out. Churches don't need to be cleaned. God does it. It's one of those miracles. That's how they know it's a church in the first place. Here's how it works. After a church has been built, the owners wait 6 months and then look inside. If it's clean, they know it's a church. So they get ready for the grand opening. And from that day on, they never have to clean it. No matter what kind of crud, grime, or muck the sinners track in, the place remains spotless. But just between you and me, a little Windex on the stained glass wouldn't hurt once in a while. It would help bring out all those bright, pretty colors they use to show the torture and bleeding of the saints.
Hi, I'm Our Lady of the TV. I'm here to say hello and to make sure everyone prays real hard for peace. Also, the last time I was here, I forgot my sunglasses. Has anyone seen my sunglasses?
A stagehand hands her the glasses.
Thank you. Hold my purse, please, would you?
She hands him her purse and puts on the sunglasses.
I know that many of you lead a pointless existence. You have dead-end jobs, bad marriages, and children who hate you because you've ruined their lives. I also know you look to symbols like me to provide solace and hope. Well, here's the deal. I have no solace to offer, and frankly, there is no hope. I'm just an illusion that means nothing. So work it out for yourselves. If you ask me, you're not trying hard enough. Thank you. I'll be back in a few years. And please, stop bothering my son with stupid requests like winning the lottery. To the stagehand, give me the purse.
Letter to a friend. Dear Trevor, the reason I'm writing is because I've lost your address and have no way of getting in touch with you. For that reason, chances are you won't receive this, in which case you should not feel obligated to reply. If, however, this letter does reach you and you wish to answer, please enclose your current address so I'll know where to send this. By the way, you can ignore the return address on this envelope, as I'm moving next week, and although I don't yet have my new address, I'll be sending it along as soon as I hear from you. Should you have any trouble locating me, please be assured I will contact you as soon as I have my new phone, so by all means give me a call and let me have your number. If it turns out that I'm unable to reach you, please don't hesitate to get in touch, as I always mention it to my friends whenever neither of us hears from the other. Should you encounter any trouble reaching me, please let me know and I will get back to you at once. Then again, if you are unable to reach me, perhaps it would be better not to get in touch because I will most likely be trying to get a hold of you. And of course, if I do reach you, please let me know immediately. Conversely, if I don't reach you, you will probably hear from me right away. Well, evening is rolling around, and as they say in Portugal, it's time to say goodbye. I hope you receive this before you mail your letter. It's so good to communicate this way. Sincerely, Sperla Vaughan. P.S. Should this letter be lost in transit, please disregard.
True fact. I saw a guy on the street wearing a T-shirt that said Couples for Christ, but he was alone, and I wondered, what would Jesus think? What's the difference between a drop and a droplet? After all, if you divide a drop into smaller parts, all you get is smaller drops. Big or little, a drop is a drop. Same thing with a crumb. But the odd thing about a crumb is that if you cut a crumb in half, you don't get two half crumbs. You get two crumbs. To me, that sounds like magic. I gotta ask David Copperfield how they do that. When it comes to God's existence, I'm not an atheist and I'm not an agnostic. I'm an acrostic. The whole thing puzzles me. I saw a homeless guy sitting on the sidewalk yammering to himself and repeatedly punctuating his remarks with, "You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?" And I thought, for God's sake, the man is talking to himself. If he doesn't know what he's saying, who would? True fact. On June 8, 1995, Glacier National Park was closed because of too much snow. Colin Powell spent his entire adult life as a soldier, trying to devise the most efficient ways of killing foreigners for his country. Then he became a diplomat, trying to devise the most efficient ways of getting foreigners to cooperate with his country. Tough sell. Whenever I hear about parents who have 9 or 10 children, the only thing I wonder is how they survive the birthday parties. I recently learned there are 3 people still alive who can do the minuet. Unfortunately, only one of them is able to move without a wheelchair. I think they should have a hotline that never answers, for people who don't follow advice in the first place. I finally figured out what email is for. It's for communicating with people you'd rather not talk to. You know what I like the most about the NCAA basketball tournament? 63 losers. The United States most closely resembles a huge, poorly thought out, sick joke. Health tip from the American Medical Association. Never pour corrosive chemicals on your testicles. A female teacher seduced a 14-year-old boy, and he turned her into the police. What was this kid thinking? Is he fucking crazy? Or gay? I would have kept that kind of thing real quiet. At least until I graduated. Cigarette companies market heavily to young people. They need young customers because their product kills the older ones. It's the only product that, if used as intended, kills the consumer. More people write poetry than read it. I wish the ecology people would save one species that would make a dramatic comeback and then wipe us out. True fact, there is actually an erotic wrestler. When I'm in someone's house and I see something I want that's small and easy to conceal, I steal it. It's my belief that property belongs to the person who wants it most. Whatever became of alpha carotene? I wonder what kind of masturbation fantasies Stephen King has. I also wonder if anyone has ever masturbated while fantasizing about having sex with a live chicken. Usually I wonder about these things while I'm masturbating. Isaiah said, "They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks." Let me ask you something. When was the last time you heard of someone who made a fortune selling plowshares and pruning hooks? You're probably thinking to yourselves right now, "I wonder what he thinks I'm thinking right now." Or you may be thinking, "I wonder when he's going to say," you're probably thinking to yourselves right now, "I wonder what he thinks I'm thinking right now." Or you could be thinking, "I wonder when he's going to wonder when I..." Well, maybe not. Hey guys, did you ever get your balls caught in the toaster when it was turned all the way up to dark brown and your wife was trying to rub butter on your balls and your pit bull was in the kitchen and he really loves butter? Ugh! It's an awful feeling. When I'm writing, I always like to have the TV playing in the background. I usually try to find a program that's interesting enough to leave on, but stupid enough to ignore. I think sometimes the word overseas is pluralized unnecessarily. The way I look at it, New York to London is oversea. After all, there's only one sea in between them.
This statement is untrue.
Regarding astrology, an obstetrician or a maternity nurse who weighs between 100 and 200 pounds actually exerts a greater gravitational force on a baby at the time of its birth than do any of the distant planets that are said to influence a person's personality and destiny. Why aren't these bulky, proximate objects factored into the astrological charts that are so carefully laid out?
There are caregivers, and there are caretakers, and yet the two words are not opposites. Why is this? Whenever I hear that someone lives in a gated community, I think of places like Auschwitz. True fact, there is actually such an organization as the Paralyzed Veterans of America, and I wonder, who answers the phone? Until you're a certain age, you don't have anything to put behind you. That's what life seems to be, a process of doing things that eventually you just want to put behind you. There are now murderous turf wars going on in which people are being brutally killed over the right to sell a substance called ecstasy. You know something you don't see anymore? The sacking of a city. Rome and Constantinople were good examples. Next time we win a war, we ought to sack the capital of the country we defeat. U.S. troops sack Baghdad. Wouldn't that be good? I guess we do our sacking in subtler ways, through the business community. I think they ought to have really fast escalators that you have to jump on and off. And if you get hurt, too bad. When I notice a little dead fly on the windowsill, one that wasn't there the day before, I always wonder how he died. I wonder if he had a stroke, or maybe a little fly heart attack. Then I think that maybe he's just pretending to be dead so I won't swat him. So I swat him.
Here's a tip from the Power and Light Company on saving energy. If you have elderly people living with you, cut back on their heat and light. Old people often exaggerate how cold they feel.
I was thinking the other day that one kid who's really going to have emotional problems when she grows up is that JonBenet Ramsey. You know, because of all the media attention, her parents being under suspicion, the speculations about sexual abuse, Jesus, that kind of thing would fuck any kid up. And then I remembered, hey, she was the one who got killed. And I thought, it's a good thing she's dead. At least she won't have to suffer.
Tell Pierre I said hello. A two-man conversation.
I'm going up to San Francisco this weekend.
Oh, well, tell Pierre I said hello. Actually, I knew you'd say that, so I took the liberty of calling him and telling him you said hello. He said in that case to tell you he also says hello. So, hello from Pierre. And he said to add, how's it going?
Oh, well, that's great. Well, tell him everything's going just fine, and don't forget to say, how are you?
Well, he and I knew you would ask that, and so Pierre has authorized me to say that he's glad you're fine, but that he hasn't been feeling too well lately.
Oh, well, tell him I'm sorry to hear that, and I hope it isn't serious.
He says he knew you would be sorry to hear that, but he thinks it will blow over.
Well, tell him, if it doesn't, I have a great doctor in San Francisco. Ginny and I met him in Hawaii when we were there last year.
Pierre says he knew you had a great doctor, but he wasn't aware he was located in San Francisco. He also says he didn't know you and Ginny had gone to Hawaii. He thought it was Cancun. And he also says, how's Ginny?
Tell him Ginny is dead.
Well, I'm sure he didn't know, but I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that he's real sorry to hear about that, and I'm willing to bet anything he offers his condolences.
And most likely he'll also say that if there's anything he can do, anything, please don't hesitate to ask.
Excuse me, Hank, I'd love to keep talking, but I have to go buy underwear.
Oh, well, Pierre says there's a sale at the Gap.
Get fucked, Hank.
I don't know why people got all excited about that guy Jeffrey Dahmer. Because he broke a few laws? So what? There's nothing wrong with killing 12 people, having sex with their corpses, masturbating on them, eating their flesh, and then saving the heads in the refrigerator. What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
So far, nobody has been able to explain to me what it was Jeffrey Dahmer did that was so wrong. First of all, let's remember, wrong is a relative term. Who's to say what's wrong? Who are we to judge? Put yourself in the other man's shoes. Who among you, under certain circumstances, might not kill 12 people, have sex with their corpses, masturbate on them, eat their flesh, and then save the heads in the refrigerator? Not one of you, I suspect. So cut the guy a little slack. Always remember, there but for the grace of God, go I. Here are some things you should not say if you encounter a comedian. First, if you're with another person at the time, don't say to your friend,
"You better watch out, he'll put you in one of his skits."
We don't like that. It's not funny. And by the way, we don't do skits. Second, if you meet him while you're at your job, do not say,
"You ought to work here, you'd get a lot of material."
It's not true. Just because you work with a bunch of simpletons doesn't mean it translates into comedy. Third, if you work at a store and we're shopping there, and some small mix-up occurs that needs to be sorted out, don't say to a co-worker,
"He's going to put this in one of his routines."
He's not. One more thing we don't like. When you tell us something that you think is funny, and then you say,
"You can use that if you want,"
we don't want to use it. Believe me. I stopped behind a small beat-up camper at a red light, and I noticed three bumper stickers. "Dare to resist drugs and violence," "There's no excuse for domestic abuse," and "Stop senior abuse." And I thought, I'm really glad I don't live with those folks. I'd bet anything they were on their way to the hospital emergency room or perhaps intensive psychiatric counseling. If I'd caught up and looked inside their vehicle, I'm sure it would have resembled a Johnson & Johnson showroom. Tune in tonight for a full-length movie on America's favorite new date show, Dinner, Movie, and a Hump. Tonight, your hosts, Dagwood Parkhaven and Candace Nooch, cook up a delicious whale chowder and breast of hyena on a bed of diced badger as they present an award-winning film about an amnesia victim, Who the Fuck Am I? Starring Esther Sylvester, Kermit McDermott, Chi-Chi Amici, and Skeeter Van Meter, and introducing Keith Bunghole as the queer. After the movie and the food, Dagwood and Candace will tear off a lengthy piece of ass on the kitchen table, taking turns being on top and demonstrating several interesting new sexual positions, including the Baghdad twirl and the Bosnian dick knot. Some of our best work with euphemisms involves the subject that makes us the most uncomfortable, death. Our most common euphemism for death is to say the person passed away or passed on. If you believe in an afterlife, you may prefer crossed over or crossed over to the other side. Whenever I hear that someone has crossed over to the other side, I always picture Fifth Avenue. Then there's the official term for dying, the doctor term. In this case, the person simply expires, like a magazine subscription. 1 month, he just doesn't show up. Unfortunately, he can't renew. Or so they say. Better check with the Hindus on that. Now, continuing. In this current age of specialization and increasing detachment, if the person in question dies in a hospital, it's called a terminal episode, although the insurance company sees it as negative patient care outcome. That one's actually kind of nice, isn't it? And if the negative patient care outcome was caused by a medical malpractice, then it's referred to as a therapeutic misadventure. Colorful term. No wonder so many doctors are leaving their practices. It's hard to get therapeutic misadventure insurance. But by far, the most creative terms we've come up with to comfort ourselves about death are the ones that describe the rituals survivors put themselves through. We owe a lot of this softened language to the funeral business, or as they prefer to be known now, the death care industry. They have completely transformed the language used to describe what happens following a death. In years past, it went like this. The old man died, so the undertaker picked up the body, brought it to the funeral home, and put it in a casket. People sent flowers and held a wake. After the funeral, they put the coffin in a hearse and drove it to the cemetery, where the dead man was buried in a grave. But in these days of heightened sensitivity, the same series of events produces what sounds like a completely different experience. The senior citizen passed away, so the funeral director claimed the remains of the decedent, took them to the memorial chapel, and placed them in a burial container. Grieving survivors sent floral tributes to be displayed in the slumber room, where the grief coordinator conducted the viewing. Following the memorial service, the funeral coach transported the departed to the Garden of Remembrance, where his human remains were interred in their final resting place. Huh? What's that? Did somebody die or something? This item demonstrates how stupid the average American is. Every 90 minutes, someone in this country is hit by a train. A train, okay? Trains are on tracks. They can't come and get you. They can't surprise you when you step off a curb. You have to go to them. Got that? There are 5,000 highway rail crossing accidents annually. To counter this problem, the Department of Transportation issued the following rules for people to follow at railroad crossings. Don't drive around lowered gates. Okay, got it. Don't cross in front of a train. Never thought of that. Don't walk on the tracks. Check. Be aware that trains can't stop quickly. Good to know. Always expect a train. This would probably be tied in with the fact that these are railroad tracks. Is that right? Correct me if I'm wrong on this. Look for more than one train. Frankly, this is one I never thought of. Maybe if I remember the others, this one will take care of itself. Here's something to think about. In the course of history's wars, many battles took place in the woods and the countryside. So sometimes I picture a soldier waking up on a spring morning, wildflowers growing around his tent, birds singing in the trees, perhaps the comforting sound of a brook trickling by in the near distance. And then a 10-pound cannonball hits him in the face. It's an interesting thought, don't you think? I wanted to be a Boy Scout, but I had all the wrong traits. Apparently, they were looking for kids who were trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. Unfortunately, at that time, I was devious, fickle, obstructive, hostile, rude, mean, defiant, glum, extravagant, cowardly, dirty, and sacrilegious. So I waited a few years and joined the Army. In New York State, the law says that the ingredients of hot dogs can legally include a certain amount or percentage of insect parts and rat droppings. It's permissible by law. So in New York, when you eat a hot dog, you more or less have to hope that the hot dog you're eating contains only the most nutritious parts of the insects, not just legs and antennae, and that the rats whose feces you're eating were on good, heart-healthy diets. I've been enjoying a new band from England. It's called So Long Mate. It's a 5-man heavy metal band. And the reason it's called So Long Mate is because at the end of each performance, the other 4 members of the band kill the lead singer. As a result, the music has a certain urgency to it. Also, it keeps the tours nice and short. It's basically one night, and then back they go to L.A. to hold auditions. The band plans to have an album ready in the year 2037.
Hello, this is David Nipplegripper, another insufferable Hollywood movie star who wants you to help some cause or charity merely because I say so. Today, I want to tell you about little Danny Pendejo. Danny needs your help. He was born with no torso. His legs are fine, his arms are fine, and his head is okay, except for one really big caved-in part on top. But he has no torso. Won't you help by being a torso donor? Even a torso that's too big will be better than no torso at all. Thank you. This is David Nipplegripper reminding you to see my new movie, Breasts on the Moon. Another sign of America's decline. Because a few people are sensitive to peanuts and have allergies that might kill them, America's commercial airlines had to stop serving those little bags of peanuts. It wasn't sufficient that the affected people could simply refuse the peanuts when they were offered. The argument was made that the people who did eat the peanuts were putting peanut dust in the air, creating a health hazard for the victims. What a load of shit. If someone is in danger of dying from inhaling peanut dust, why aren't they dead already? Why didn't they die at a baseball game or at the circus? America has gone soft. Instructions. Follow carefully. Release the handle by pulling down the strap and tightening the fasteners. Press the button and remove the safety cap. Then turn the knob to unleash the spring and wind the excess slack onto the spool. Loosen the screws on the plate lid and insert the tabs into the slots. Rotate the control switch a quarter of a turn before lowering the two levers. Then drop the main crank into a neutral position. Be careful not to unscrew the housing before engaging the catch. Plug in and you're set to go. If smoke fills the room, read the troubleshooting guide at the rear of this manual. I like the good actors, the real actors, the ones who keep their lives private. Sean Penn, Harvey Keitel, Alan Arkin, Robert Duvall, Al Pacino, Jack Nicholson, Johnny Depp, Robert De Niro, Gary Oldman, William Hurt, Dustin Hoffman, Gene Hackman, Gary Sinise, Christopher Walken, Gary Busey. They keep to themselves. You don't see them appearing all the time on TV. They don't cooperate with Access Hollywood and Entertainment Tonight. They're actors, not celebrities. They keep to themselves. That's why their work is so good. Good for them. Dear Ma, even though you're dead, I wanted you to know I'm doing real well. No thanks to you, I might add. I now have my own TV show, and it's getting very high ratings. I play the part of a guy whose mother dies, but it doesn't really bother him. I know they don't have good reception where you are, so I'm going to send you a tape. Do you think a tape will be okay in the intense heat? Love, Dirk. I don't like ass-kissers, flag-wavers, or team players. I like people who buck the system, individualists. I often warn kids. Somewhere along the way, someone is going to tell you there is no I in team. What you should tell them is, maybe not, but there is an I in independence, individuality, and integrity. Avoid teams at all cost. Keep your circle small. Never join a group that has a name. If they say, we're the so-and-sos, take a walk. And if somehow you must join, if it's unavoidable, such as a union or a trade association, go ahead and join, but don't participate. It will be your death. And if they tell you you're not a team player, just congratulate them on being so observant. You ever run over a guy with your car and you kind of panic, you know? So you back up and you run over him a second time. And then you realize you have to get the fuck out of there before the police show up. So you put it in drive again and run over him a third time. What the fuck? Might as well. What else you gonna do at that point? Drive around him? Anyway, as you drive away, did you ever reflect on the fact that each time you ran over him, the crunching sound got fainter and fainter? That's because he already had two good deep grooves pressed into him that you kept driving through. Parents are such fucking doofuses.
I saw a bumper sticker that said, Proud Parents of a Sailor. What the fuck is so special about being a sailor? How about Proud Parents of a Tailor? Isn't a tailor worthy, too? The whole proud parent thing is bullshit. Pretty soon I'm expecting to see Proud Parents of a Child. Have a little self-respect, will you? You never see children with bumper stickers that say, Proud Son of Mr. and Mrs. Clayman. That's because Mr. and Mrs. Clayman are such fucking doofuses. I don't think there's really such a thing as morality. I think it's a human construct designed to facilitate the control of people. Values, ethics, legal standards, all of these things are human-generated, and they're lumped under some vague idea called morality. But suppose humans got it wrong. Suppose there's no actual objective morality. Suppose there's just a natural, worldly, secular, common-sense standard of behavior whose purpose is what's best for getting along and what's best for survival. That would be a good system. Why should a system like that be overlaid with a sense of spooky, mystical, judgmental oversight? When this Catholic guy, Cardinal Bernardin of Chicago, died, they praised him for accepting death gracefully. Excuse me, but isn't that what you're supposed to do, accept death gracefully? What's that? You say many people don't accept death gracefully? I see. So now we're evaluating people's behavior and praising them based on what other people don't do. Wonderful. I don't think people should ever get credit for doing something they're supposed to do, even if it's rarely done by others. Condemn the ones who don't do it if you like, but don't praise the ones who do it. Only one of the two behaviors is worth commenting on, not both. You know those broken white lines that separate the lanes on a highway? Have you ever counted them? If you do, you'll find that there are 100 of them every mile. It's true. Each line is 1/100 of a mile from the next one. Count them for yourself as you track your distance on the odometer. Just count how many there are each 1/10 of a mile. There should be 10. But while you're counting, don't forget to keep an eye out for that big 18-wheeler up ahead parked sideways in the middle of the road. Hi, I'm Ferris Banderhead, another bothersome movie star who tells people to support some charity or other in order to make myself appear concerned and to increase my popularity. Not to mention easing the guilt I feel for having much more than I deserve. But enough about me. April is National Hunger Month. In Beverly Hills, we're having our annual hunger banquet and gala called Hors d'oeuvres for Ethiopia. Send in your dollars today and help us feed people around the world who could certainly use a nice hors d'oeuvre. And remember, the sooner we conquer hunger, the sooner we can start working on upset stomach. Thank you. This is Ferris Banderhead reminding you to see my new spy movie, The Snotlocker Papers. I'm Dr. Mannheim at the Mannheim Rehab and Recovery Center. People ask me, how can I tell when one of my loved ones needs help with a substance abuse problem? And I say, if you see them lying in a corner, naked, in a puddle of their own filth, it may be time to think about counseling. Call Mannheim today, and we'll come over and pick them up. But before we get there, please clean up the filth. Uncle Blitzen was a troubled man. As a child visiting backstage at a concert, he was fondled by a viola player and lived the rest of his days with an unnatural fear of stringed instruments. He was one of the 900 people present at the Jonestown Massacre, but he threw away the Kool-Aid and only pretended to be dead. When everyone stopped moving, he looted the corpses. Subsequently, he moved to Stockholm, where he became the town scumbag. Years later, he reemerged in England as a self-proclaimed bishop, roaming the Midlands with a band of rogue altar boys, administering forced communion to lapsed Catholics. He died during Hurricane Shlomo, in front of an adult sex shop, when the store's sign blew down and he was crushed to death by a giant neon dildo. Uncle Pinocchio had 23 separate and distinct personalities. Unfortunately, all of them were unpleasant. He believed that Porky Pig cartoons represented actual events, and he once stabbed his dog with a ceremonial Japanese saber in a dispute over a lamb bone. He always wore a three-piece suit. It didn't have a vest. The jacket was just torn in half. He drifted from job to job, balloon vendor, freelance daredevil, and stoop laborer among them. He finally settled in his basement, where he lost his mind trying to invent a rectal harmonica. After that, the family kept him tied to a linden tree in the backyard, where they fed him with a slingshot. After 6 years, they released him on Mussolini's birthday, whereupon he married a passive-aggressive librarian who later beat him to death with a dictionary stand. Uncle Shadrach felt he was special because one of his testicles was shaped like a Brazil nut and the other like a cashew. He loved to run up to women screaming, "You want some mixed nuts?" He told me that in his younger days he was quite a lover and once fucked a girl so hard her freckles came off. Alas, he didn't marry well. His wife, Chlorine, looked like something that might be found in the dumpster behind a cloning center. Her PMS was so bad she had a mood swing installed in her backyard. As a child, while watching a gay pride parade, she was run over by a float full of lesbians and was eventually found dead in a military barracks, having ingested a load of bad sperm. Shadrach was electrocuted by a Radio Shack pacemaker he purchased at a thrift shop. Uncle Shemp was alarmingly unexceptional. He had no detectable lifestyle, and his only accomplishment was the fact that he was a lifelong member of the general public. He started slowly, struggled hard, and eventually clawed his way to the back of the pack. Occasionally, he would show a sudden flash of mediocrity, but quickly returned to his usual pattern of complete insignificance. He was a man with no memories. He didn't have amnesia. He simply had no memories. As he put it, nothing big ever really happened. As a result, he wore a medic alert bracelet saying, "Please let me die." His only pleasure was his hobby, picking through airline wreckage looking for children's toys. He died at 75 from a head injury, suffered as the result of undue glee following a bowel movement. Tumor humor. Guys, gals, and cancer. Women. The produce department.
"I see where Ruthie Garrick went under the knife the other day. She had a tumor on her the size of a grapefruit."
"Well, that's bigger than Estelle Mealy's tumor. Estelle's was the size of a large navel orange."
"Yeah, but sometimes a large navel orange can be almost as big as a grapefruit." "That's true, especially one of them small Indian River grapefruits. I don't like them. Too sour."
"Me either."
"Listen, girls, this wasn't no small Indian River-sized tumor. The doctor said this thing was almost the size of a cantaloupe. He claimed if he'd left it in any longer, it probably would have wound up as big as a cassava melon."
"Earlene Miller had a tumor the size of a cassava melon. Actually, her sister claimed it was approaching honeydew proportions."
"Well, I don't know nothing about no tumors, but when my Aunt Ruby died, her liver was the size of a champion watermelon. I got a picture of it somewhere."
"Really? You know, they say that after you die, your liver keeps right on growing."
"Well, I'm thinking Ruby's liver had probably reached its limit. I mean, where do you go from watermelon?
Beach ball?"
"Kate, a beach ball's not a food."
"You want food? I'll give you food. Well, you hear this. 10 years ago, when my sister Myra had her gallbladder out, they found 20 gallstones in it. Each one of them was the size and the shape of a different type of food. A raisin, a pea, a caper, a grape, a radish, an olive, a pearl onion, a melon ball, a hazelnut, a marshmallow, a Brussels sprout, a Bing cherry, a kumquat, a gherkin, a filbert, a small whole boiled potato, a cocktail sausage, a meatball, a lima bean, and a dwarf pumpkin."
"They took all that out of your aunt?"
"They sure did."
"Jesus, did she feel any better?"
"She said she was hungry."
Tumor humor. Guys, gals, and cancer. Men. The sports section.
"I see where Petey Whalen died the other day. They say he had a tumor on him the size of a beach ball."
"No kidding? That one under his arm?" Jesus, it must have grown fast.
It sure did. I can remember the day I first saw it. It was small, like a marble. Then, almost overnight, it looked like a golf ball. I couldn't believe it.
That was the day he showed it to me. By the time I saw it, it looked like a slightly enlarged handball, maybe just approaching racquetball size. I spent about an hour with him, and as I was leaving, I glanced at it. The damn thing looked like a tennis ball. I don't mean it had fuzz on it or anything. I just mean it was the size of a tennis ball.
Yeah, that's when he went to the hospital. He said on the way over in the taxi, it went from a baseball to a softball, and then in the waiting room it reached the size of a small regulation volleyball. Finally, when he got into the examining room, the doctors were so alarmed at its growth, they smashed it with a big frying pan, and it temporarily flattened out into an oval shape.
I remember that. For about an hour, it resembled a football.
Yeah, then it slowly became round again, but it kept on getting bigger. Suddenly, it developed big black spots all over it.
The soccer ball stage.
Yeah, of course, by that time, the situation was hopeless. Pretty soon, the thing was up to the size of a basketball, and before you knew it, it had gone right past medicine ball and was heading for beach ball status. They finally had to move him out of his room and put him in the gymnasium.
Appropriate. How'd he die, anyway?
They tried to operate on him, but as soon as they made an incision, all the air rushed out of him. Death by deflation.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what we forgot? Lacrosse and polo.
One of my pet pursuits is keeping track of how the news media describe those things in the news that increase or decrease. I can generally rely on the fact that the same verbs will be used repeatedly in the same situations. One of the first things I noticed is that while certain things skyrocket, other things tend to mushroom. Medical costs skyrocket. The national debt doesn't do that. It mushrooms. And experts warn, if present trends continue, both of these things will eventually go through the roof. But mushrooming is not the only thing the national debt does. It also balloons. There aren't too many things that balloon. The annual budget deficit used to balloon, then for a while it didn't balloon, now it balloons again. And by the way, people can balloon as well. I remember reading in the tabloids once that the actress Delta Burke had ballooned to some weight that apparently the publication found unacceptable. So, thus far, we've skyrocketed, mushroomed, and ballooned. But let's not forget snowballing. You know what snowballs? An investigation. What happens is an inquiry becomes an investigation, and the investigation begins to snowball. And what does it snowball into? Right, a full-blown probe. And if the probe uncovers enough dirt, it could possibly mushroom into a full-blown scandal. Then we have the case of swelled. During the 1990s, job roles swelled. By the way, I've often wondered if those job roles are at all similar to the welfare roles we used to hear so much about. Just between you and me, I've never actually seen welfare roles, but I'm sure that with a little margarine or jelly, they're quite delicious. And it's certainly heartening to see the food stamp program working so effectively. Getting back to our subject here, I've found that one of the best places to keep an eye on these up and down words is Wall Street, financial reporting. For purposes of this activity, I'll use hypothetical examples of economic activity that don't actually reflect recent conditions. I can't keep adjusting this material according to the whims of the economy. And besides, this is about language, not finance. Just to review, we've already skyrocketed, mushroomed, ballooned, snowballed, and swelled. Now, as we enter the world of Wall Street, we add a few simpler verbs, climb, surge, and jump. The stock market climbed today as prices surged on news that housing starts had jumped 10%. Lots of action. Another big thing on Wall Street is soaring. Stock prices soared today as reports showed earnings were up sharply. Or they may have shot upward. At any rate, upward is good. I remember one time hearing Lou Dobbs himself telling me that the Dow Jones Industrials had vaulted upward 200 points. And on the same day, not to be left too far behind, the long bond inched higher. Then we have the very special case of spiraling. The nice thing about spiraling is that it can go in either direction. As medical costs have spiraled upward, the quality of medical care has spiraled downward. And not only do these two medical numbers spiral upward and downward, both of them are actually capable of spiraling out of control. Spiraling downward brings us to the verbs for things that are falling. For some reason, downward verbs are more colorful than upward verbs. Downward is where we discover plunge, plummet, and nosedive. You can always tell when a bull market is over, because housing starts plunge, new car sales plummet, and orders for durable goods take a nosedive. At a time like that, stock prices are usually on the verge of collapse. Or, instead of collapsing, they may simply tumble, drop sharply, or go into a tailspin. And if stock prices are in a tailspin, you can be sure it won't be long before they find themselves in a dizzying freefall. Continuing with bear markets, not all days are so dramatic. Occasionally, prices only dip slightly. Dip slightly is the opposite of edge higher. And before we leave these words for increasing and decreasing, I would like to make special mention of beefed up. I remember reading once that in anticipation of a visit by Yasser Arafat, security at the United Nations had been beefed up. Arafat being a Muslim, of course, beef would have been the preferred meat. You certainly wouldn't want security to be porked up. I can think of any number of reasons why we wouldn't want that. And by the way, if you've ever seen some of these security people, you know that the last thing they need is more pork. Or beef. Or food of any kind, for that matter. Beefed up is one of those terms that has no exact opposite. Nothing ever gets beefed down. They never say, now that Arafat's visit has been concluded, security at the United Nations has been beefed down. Doesn't sound right. Instead, they say, scaled back. Always remember, anything that's been beefed up can be scaled back. Although occasionally, for variety's sake, rather than scaled back, the item may be pared down. Hiked and trimmed are two more good up-and-down examples. Quite often, during the same session of Congress, defense spending will be hiked while education spending is trimmed. And sometimes, if Congress is in a really bad mood, education spending is slashed and defense spending skyrockets. Well, we've gone from sky high to rock bottom, and we seem to be winding down now. So let me add one last item. I think I may have finally figured out the difference between ramping up and ratcheting up. I'm pretty sure that while ramping up takes place on a continuum, ratcheting up is more a series of increments. But I do find it interesting that, as with the beef situation, I rarely hear of ramping or ratcheting down. As for me, I'm at wit's end. As you know, people no longer have problems in this country. They have issues. This shift grows out of our increasingly desperate need to shade the truth and see things as more positive than they really are. Problems sound negative and ordinary. Issues sound important, worthy of attention. People are proud to announce them. I have issues. They feel superior to others who haven't made the switch. Poor fuck, he has problems. I have issues. To feel extra superior, they may even pair it with some other trendy upgrade. He has a drug problem. I have chemical dependency issues. As with everything in American culture, the use of the word spread indiscriminately to the point where it, of course, lost all its usefulness. During the murder case in San Francisco in 2001, in which two dogs mauled a woman to death, one of the neighbors said, "Everyone knew those dogs had issues with females." Commercials picked it up. L'Oreal says mature skin has issues all its own. An adult diaper commercial informs me that many women have bladder control issues. So now people have all these issues. Trust issues, boundary issues, abandonment issues, personal space issues. Clearly, I have a problem with this word. But problem has lost its power. Cheapened by the careless use of expressions like, "What's your problem? You got a problem with that?" No problem. And for those truly in a hurry, no prob. I needed a new word, and I refused to say issues. So, instead, I turned to that ultimate source of creative language bending, our nation's capital. I heard a prominent senator, when asked if some issue presented a problem for him, say, "Well, it's not a problem, but it is a concern." And I thought, wow, another choice for people who refuse to acknowledge problems. I adopted it immediately, but I hope concern doesn't catch on to the point where it becomes a problem. After all this trouble, I'd hate to have to deal with concern issues. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for the secret news. Here is the secret news. All people are afraid. No one knows what they're doing. Everything is getting worse. Some people deserve to die. Your money is worthless. No one is properly dressed. At least one of your children will disappoint you. The system is rigged. Your house will never be completely clean. All teachers are incompetent. There are people who really dislike you. Nothing is as good as it seems. Things don't last. No one is paying attention. The country is dying. God doesn't care.
This has been a Hyperion Audiobooks production of When Will Jesus Bring the Pork Chops? Written and read by George Carlin. Executive Producer, Maya Thomas. Produced and directed by John Runette. Production supervised by Linda Ross. Original music by Wayne Peet.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.